Hello, podcasters. I'm Lisa Henderson, editorial director with Apply Clinical Trials. And today we are speaking with Jenny Ahlstrom, founder of the HealthTree Foundation. And she's going to discuss her foundation, how it was formed, and its goals with clinical research. And so there's numerous reasons why we wanted to have Jenny on today. She is a cancer survivor, so she clearly has a mission to do more with that community. But also, audience, I don't know if you know how many resources are out there for patients and communities such as this. There are numerous people as dedicated and giving as Jenny is, and they form these communities in various levels of reach. But I just want you to be aware that they are out there. And that's why we're happy to have Jenny here as another representative of that audience. So Jenny, thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So can you describe your journey from your diagnosis of multiple myeloma to establishing your foundations?
Sure. So I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma in 2010. I was 43 at the time, which is a really young age for that type of blood cancer. Average age is about 72. And it was not our first experience with cancer in our family. I think had it been our first experience, we would have done things like we did the first time. My brother-in-law was diagnosed with AML 6 years prior to my diagnosis. And his experience really heavily impacted how we treated my cancer. He was not able to participate in a clinical trial. As you know, AML is kind of this crisis type of situation. He lived for a year and it was a very traumatic experience. And what it really taught us is we need to understand our options, clinical trial options included, as patients. And so when I was diagnosed, and it taught us a whole host of other lessons that are reflected really in how we decided to go about creating the foundation. Our initial idea for the foundation was, what if we aggregated patient data together? And wouldn't that be an effective tool for researchers to help develop new hypotheses faster, to do their research faster? We were just looking at ways to speed up research. And funny enough, we realized we kind of didn't have relationships with myeloma experts and we didn't have relationships with patients. So we looked at the most, I guess, personal thing. I assumed I would relapse after my initial therapy. I did tandem transplants and then a couple years of consolidation and maintenance therapy. But after I finished that, I wanted to understand my clinical trial options. So I probably called 8 different centers and said, I'm interested in your clinical trial. I got a call back from 2 centers out of the 8. And I just realized this is harder than it looks to join a clinical trial. So I started a radio show or a podcast called Myeloma Crowd Radio. And I started interviewing investigators about their open trials because I thought, you know, if a patient doesn't, I went on clinicaltrials.gov, which I think is, it's great that everybody is posting their trials there, but it is not an effective tool for patients to try to join a trial. I think it's horrific for patients. So I got on, I read a few of the trials. I didn't understand what they were trying to accomplish, any of the drug names. I just realized there was so much that I didn't know about this process that that's when I started the radio program because I just wanted to understand it and hear it directly from the investigator. So I've now done over 150 shows like that. Wow. The investigators love it because they get to share their clinical trial. Patients love it because they get to hear about advancing research and ways that they can participate or know if they can or can't participate. And then that was really the beginning of the foundation. After we did that, then we started creating, and I say we because my husband has been quite involved in supporting me to do this. We looked at my cancer like we would a startup. We had background in tech. I had worked for IBM prior, and he was an entrepreneur and investor, both on the venture capital side and other types of investing. And so we decided to look at this, like I said, like we would a startup. We looked at what would make a difference, what would build trust with the patient community, and what would speed up a cure. Those two things are the things we ask ourselves every time we create a new program. And we are a little bit unusual in that we have our own in-house development team. So we started building software tools for patient advocacy that even other diseases could use. And we're in the process of trying to figure out how we can help other disease communities. And we've done that in AML. But for example, so we created a news platform that has a myeloma specialist directory. We now have the same news platform for AML. We have an events platform, and we have coded all the software on our own. We tried using third-party software. It didn't really work. It wasn't as integrated as we wanted it to be. So we built these tools that patients can use. So we host the radio show, and we do live meetings. We do virtual webinars. And we're kind of constantly educating the patient community about what's new, what's coming, what's standard of care today, what clinical trials are opening, because the myeloma space is very exciting, I would say. Lots of development being done in that space. We also developed like a coach and mentoring platform. So we have like 140 volunteers who are educated, and we invite them to help support patients. To teach them and train them, we built a disease university, or learning management system. And we have now over 100 myeloma specialists as our faculty. So we ask them basic questions that they get all the time in clinic, like what's a monoclonal protein, or, you know, how do I read my labs, or what's a plasmacytoma, or something like that. And then they answer that question. We package it into a class, we add quiz questions, and then patients can get educated on their own. And then because we built a patient community, and we built kind of a lifetime relationship with that patient, serving them in all sorts of different ways, then we went back to our original idea and said, now we're ready. We have a relationship with 200 myeloma specialists. We have a relationship with, well, we have, like on our news website, we have like 870,000 unique visitors per year, and about 10% of the population in our Facebook groups. So we decided to invite them to join this patient data portal, basically. And it's kind of like a registry, but it's also a little more than a registry. Well, I would say a lot more than a registry, because we give benefits back to the patient. So they can track their disease, they can track their labs, their genetics, their prior lines of therapy, basically everything that would be in their EHR. And then they can add to it their demographics, their family's history, their any other comorbidities that they have, their experiences, their story, everything about that particular thing about their disease. And then we show them treatment options that they could consider that are personalized for them based on logic from myeloma experts. They can see side effect solutions that are jointly aggregated between other patients, like what do you do for neuropathy? Oh, you know, 90% of patients say they use gabapentin and it works well. So it's kind of data-based side effect solutions. And then we facilitate research. We also have a clinical trial finder inside of that platform that helps patients find clinical trials. But we also have a survey and study platform inside of that tool. So if an investigator wants to ask a patient, you know, 5 questions like, were you vaccinated post-transplant? We can just invite the patients to answer those questions without a recruitment effort on the investigator's part. And we give the data back to the investigator for free, and then they can publish on that data. So our goal is to cure the disease faster. And those are some of the things that we have done.
That's amazing.
It's been busy. and very fun, I would have to say. It's been so fun.
So you said that you thought that you would relapse. Has that not happened?
I had a very long remission time. I was in a stringent complete response for many years. And about 4 years ago, my disease started coming back. And it's, you know, I went back to all the tools that we built. So how do I make a treatment decision? And I use the clinical trial finder. We partnered with a third party to do the clinical trial finder at the beginning. We've since created our own for AML, and we'll backfill that on the myeloma side. But I use that tool to, you know, we actually built a telehealth portal as part of this, call it the HealthTree Cure Hub, as part of that. And I did my consults using that portal. And the doctors were totally amazed. They were like, oh, that's the easiest consult that I've ever done, because all your information is right here. And I was definitely wanting to look ahead. So I did join a CAR-T clinical trial, and I start that process I've started the process, so I get my cells back next week.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in clinical trial participation. I just see it as this is one way patients can really move the bar. And, you know, it benefits me personally by getting access, earlier access to some of these therapies that are not approved yet, when I can see that the data is really promising.
I have so many questions. The physician that used your hub, the health, was he or she already a member of your KOL, your specialist group, or was this someone new using it?
This was one of the KOLs, yeah.
Okay. And they really thought it was just great having everything right in front of them, and it was so helpful.
Yeah, in an instant. They didn't have to go aggregate my records from three facilities, because I had already done that for them. And it's all validated data. We match it against the medical record. Sometimes we pull from, you know, FHIR APIs and things like that into our portal. And sometimes we have to do it manually. But we have a whole patient experience team and a data validation team. So it goes through very rigorous data scrutiny before it's put into, you know, that for research purposes, for sure. Our whole portal, we have about 9,700 patients who are participating. So in a disease where they're, you know, that's, we're almost to 10% of living myeloma patients who are using it, which is incredible, I think. Yeah. You know, we got a lot of questions about, like, who are you? And we did a 50-city roadshow tour back in 2018 when we were just kind of socializing this idea and had a pilot in place. And the most frequent questions were, you know, who are you and why are you doing this and what are you going to do with my data?
Yeah.
So we were able to say that. And, you know, this is, we're patients ourselves and we're doing it so we can find a cure for myeloma faster. And we're going to keep your information secure and we won't abuse your trust.
So I'm going to ask the next question about your background with IBM, and also by, because the way you speak about data, you seem very knowledgeable. So how did being a former analyst for IBM factor into what you do now?
Well, I was a systems engineer and a marketing rep, and I was actually on a product called Image Plus, which was the first medical record scanning software, you know?
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. And we've come a long way, but I think healthcare sort of acts sometimes like the internet doesn't exist. Very laggard, and it doesn't make any sense to me that we can't apply tools to accelerate these processes. When an investigator comes to me and says, you know, it would take me $250,000 and 2 years to answer these 10 basic questions, like, as a patient, my head wants to explode, because, like, why? It doesn't make any sense to me. If patients, and patients are so willing to contribute to academic research, they have never been provided the tools to do it. And so I'm not as experienced on the data analytics side. We have people in our organization that do that. But in terms of building the software tools, I know what I want it to look like as a patient. I know what type of support I want and need as a patient. So, you know, like, how do you get to know what this disease is all about? And you're expected to make treatment decisions, even clinical trial treatment decisions, when it's a disease you'd never heard of before. So boom, you know, Helter University for myeloma. Here's, you can binge watch your way through Helter University and learn everything you want about this disease as fast as you want. Your family members can watch it to support you if you're not the one asking the right questions. I guess I wasn't afraid of technology is my just short answer to that.
So can you tell me the best website for the audience to access and learn more?
The foundation as a whole, we're in the process of redoing some of our pages, but healthtree.org will be the main page. And for myeloma today, it's mylomacrowd.org for that. And that'll kind of give you a sense of all the different tools that we have available. We decided to use our tools to stand up a whole new division for AML, because that was the disease that my brother-in-law passed away from. But not only for that reason, there's been a lot of activity in the AML space and since 2017, particularly. And we wanted to, and a lot of open clinical trials. So we wanted to support that and facilitate just faster discoveries on the AML side. as well. And there was no existing foundation in the AML space that was completely dedicated to AML. So we're replicating all our programs, and we've been able to stand up our programs in a 6-month window. It's been incredible.
Excellent. So in August, it sounds like it was in development much longer, but you launched the clinical trial founder for AML.
Yes, we did. We launched the news website and the specialist directory and our events platform and the radio program and roundtable meetings and everything for the AML community in a 6-month period, including the clinical trial finder. And the clinical trial finder right now has advanced filtering. So you can see everything that, if you just want to look at CAR T or you just want to look at a FLT3 inhibitor or something like that on the AML side, you can search by phase of study, whether it's recruiting or not. You can do it by genetics or by drug name or whatever. And those are the advanced filters. And then the next phase, which is coming in the next month, will be more personalization. So I can sign a consent. You can go grab my lab values. So now you know my platelet count and my creatinine level or whatever the criteria are for inclusion in the clinical trial. And it'll match against all available and open clinical trials. So you can see, okay, instead of a list of 350 open trials in AML, now I can see my personal list of maybe 20 that I could join, which makes it so much easier. And then we have a team on the back end that can explain them to you and help you call the facility and really just walk you through the whole clinical trial process, because it is not easy. It's not an easy process.
So everything that you're saying, number one, is truly amazing, because, you know, clinical trials, you're right, clinicaltrials.gov was built to be just a platform to a legal requirement, you know, to just make sure that clinical trials were registered, you know, but you're right, the language in it is just daunting.
Totally. I mean, I looked online, there are 450 open myeloma trials when I was diagnosed. I read about two of them and then I just started crying, you know, like, how am I going to navigate this thing? How do you match criteria? Like, it's impossible to do that on that platform. So unless you have somebody really walking you through it and explaining things to you, oh, this is what you might want to consider. Oh, you've had four prior lines of therapy. Well, you can only join these two, you know, like you really need help.
Yeah. So, and you provide that first, you offered that advanced search, and then you have people that can navigate that for your community once they choose it and help get them enrolled in those trials.
Yes. So we'll call the facility for them. We'll kind of connect them to the doctor. We'll make sure they're connected to the research team and that there's a good handoff there and that the facility's responding. You know, sometimes, well, investigator-led trials, you know, it might be a facility, and pharma trials, it might be just kind of a central, you know, contact where you have to try to join that way.
So I was going to ask you about your personal experience with clinical trials, and you already mentioned you had called 10 on your first round and only two centers called you back.
Yeah, that was when I was first diagnosed. I didn't need it at the time, but it just was a wake-up call that, you know, okay, I'm trying actively, I'm proactively trying to contact you to say that, yes, I want to join your clinical trial. I want to learn more about it because I didn't really understand what it was about. And I just think everybody's so overwhelmed. I think everybody in healthcare, it seems to me, that they're being asked to do too much, you know, they're being asked to do more than they have time to do. So you just need a little more support to kind of make that a smoother process. And we know a lot of investigators in the myeloma space. And so it's easier for us to say, hey, so-and-so wants to get into your trial, and could you work with them to do a little softer handoff for the patient? I had a patient, I was sitting in the clinic a couple of weeks ago, and a patient was like, wait, I think, like, he kept looking over at me and it's like, oh, okay. And then he got bold enough to come over and he's like, I joined a clinical trial because of you. I have smoldering myeloma and I decided to join this trial because you interviewed Doug Saborov at Huntsman and he had run through all the clinical trials that were open at Huntsman as part of one of our webinar events. And that was super fun to hear that patients were joining clinical trials because of what we were, of the work we have been doing. And then we had another patient who just reached out to me, and she I don't know, clinical trials are just so tricky. You know, she had to go off therapy to be able to qualify for a trial.
Yeah.
And because she had to go off therapy and then there was a delay on the trial, her myeloma kind of spiraled out of control. And then she didn't qualify for the trial anymore. And it was a delay, not on her part, but the sponsor. And so she was like, oh no, now I have out of control disease and I can't join the trial anymore. So, you know, it's kind of like little things like that. I had a girlfriend too, who went vegan in the middle of her trial and then her iron count dropped and she didn't know that that was like a cutoff. So she had to leave the trial and she's like, I wish I would have known all that.
Right.
So sometimes she was like, I would have eaten a steak, sure. You know, like whatever I have to do to stay in this trial, I will do. So patients are willing. Sometimes I just think all the information needs to get to them. And I understand what a complex process it is. So it's tough, but I just think clinical trials are a good option for patients and they should always be considered.
So pharmaceutical companies, the sponsors, CROs, or individual researchers, how do they access your community and what do they do? I mean, you did say that that one investigator was able to ask questions that would have cost an astronomical amount of money and time had they had to do it on their own. Could you provide other examples?
Yeah. So this particular investigator, Mike Thompson, he was from Aurora in Wisconsin, and he wanted to know these just a minimal set of questions. We ended up getting him over 500 responses in a 2-month period. We decided to run a COVID study ourselves with some investigators as advisors when COVID hit, and we were able to recruit 1,100 patients in a 4-week period. And then we did a phase 2 of that study the following year, and we had over 960 or something like that join our phase 2 for COVID just to see how COVID was impacting myeloma patients. So sometimes we will come up with ideas. For example, we will be running a 3-year CAR-T study with several academic investigators as our advisors on different questions, because we want to see how CAR-T is being used in the real world and what the impact looks like in the real world based on genetics, different lines of therapy, prior lines of therapy, and et cetera, et cetera. And then we have the platform, so an investigator can send us their survey questions. They can get it IRB approved. We can get it IRB approved for them. We're doing one with Huntsman right now about, you know, how do you define cure in multiple myeloma? How does a patient define a cure? Is it continual therapy? Is it something else? And we'll be putting that in our system. And then we send an email out to all the patients who are in the platform and we say, hey, investigator so-and-so wants to answer these questions. Will you answer those questions for them? And patients do it. And then we send the raw data answers back to the investigator. We can do those types of surveys. We can also do more detailed studies. So for example, we're doing a study with Dr. Shaw at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and she wants to know if plant-based diet has an impact in smoldering myeloma progression. And so we are working with her. She's getting her IRB right now, and she did an initial survey to see if patients would be willing to change their diet. So we facilitated that for her. She got those answers back, and now she will do the full study inside of our platform. And we will be contacting the patients. She'll also do microbiome samples, so we'll help coordinate some of that for her. And, you know, we're in constant communication with the patients because this is a patient advocacy organization. It's kind of unusual to do this from a patient advocacy organization. I don't think it's really typical, but
yeah,
it's something that we can and are capable of doing. We have a team in place to do it. And I think where we're headed is, you know, we would like to be able to run. You're hearing a lot about like distributed clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and more geographic, more diversity and inclusion, especially in the myeloma space. We have that issue with African-American patients who have myeloma 2 to 3 more times, as they're 2 to 3 more times as likely to participate or to get myeloma, but lots lower clinical trial participation. So how do you make that accessible to everybody, rural, ethnic, socioeconomic? And this type of platform, we'd ultimately like to be like a clinical research organization where a pharma company could run a clinical trial using our tools and we would do the outreach, we would do the follow-up. There's less loss to follow-up kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're in constant communication with the patient and we have access to their records wherever they're being seen. Doesn't matter to us.
Yeah. And to your point about the African-American community, that 2 to 3 more times likely to get, is that the myeloma? The
multiple myeloma. Mm-hmm.
So how do you encourage, you know, because we do discuss this more with the minority communities, not trusting the healthcare system as much or the research enterprise as much. How do you overcome that with your community?
It's a tough one for everybody and always has been. With the African American community, they want to know that it's a relationship of known trust. So if you do not have that lifetime relationship with these patients, you will likely not get them involved in clinical trial research because they don't have a relationship with you. And a lot of what they are willing to do is relationship based. So our goal in the coming year is to create something called HealthTree Clinic Connect, mm-hmm. which is a researcher and a clinician portal, basically. So the facility can do referrals to our tools. And then in return, we can provide the facility with a portal that they can see all of their patients. The whole diversity, inclusion, and equity is facilitating the coordination of resources with clinical care. And that handoff doesn't happen very well right now because everyone's just overwhelmed, right? So if we get a referral to some of our tools, we can take a more personalized approach and say, oh, you know, Susan, I'm so happy to talk to you. And what can I do for you? What kind of things do you need? And then provide all the tools that we have to offer. But then on the other end, you know, so we've had some nurses say at an academic center, well, I've referred out to the community center because we can't handle all the myeloma patients at our academic center. So I would really love to be able to, that patient's calling me to say, hey, is it time for me to come in for new treatment? Are my labs? And then the academic, you know, nurse has to go get the records from the community lab and bring them in, and it's not, or even get online and it's not easy to find or easy to see. So when we showed them what we had to offer, it's all right there. The lab values are all right there and the myeloma markers are like in one place. She said, I'm going to tell all my patients about this because this would facilitate that kind of interaction so much better. So we have that program on our radar for next year, and we'll be reaching out to first the academic centers to provide that to them and their nursing staff and their clinicians if they want it. And then we're doing simultaneous outreach to the community centers because actually that's where 80% of myeloma patients are being treated.
Everything that you're talking about is everything that we write about, you know, and that we see in the industry. It's so good to know that this is why I like to bring in different stakeholders so that you're not operating in the dark. There are resources out there, not just for patients, but the actual, you know, people in the industry. You know, there are resources out there. There people are like doing it and doing it well. I mean, this sounds like super, super helpful. That your program sounds so advanced, you know, and I'm sure, as you said, you get less loss to follow up because your patients are already engaged and they're already meaningfully participating in your platform. So they're already, you know, right there with you.
Yeah. And I mean, we're looking at it from a patient perspective, you know, like what do you need? So we're adding new things all the time. Like we'll be adding a journaling feature to our platform so patients can journal part of their experience. But can we also ask standardized quality of life questions every 6 months to the same community? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, like our platform includes everything like data. I mean, like labs and genetics and prior lines of therapy and all the things that I talked about earlier. So it's probably the most comprehensive data set in myeloma. You know, I know a lot of people are trying to use like just EHR data. We found that data to be pretty limited. And yeah. Working with one of our former advisors from Health Catalyst, he said, you know, really only 8% of patient data is in the EHR. So where's the other 92%? Well, it's in patients' heads and it's maybe on their Fitbit or, you know, it's in their allergy clinic or lots of other places.
So true. So another topic that we do talk a lot about in the publication and on our website, especially around rare diseases, because there is a lot of work in rare disease and a lot of trials going on. And so what suggestions would you have for the people in the audience that are designing clinical trial protocols, or they're, you know, trying to get a site plan together for patients? What would you suggest for them?
Well, first of all, they need to involve patients in the clinical trial design, because I sit on probably 6 or 7 different pharma boards, like ad boards and things like that, mm-hmm. to help. And there are some very well-educated myeloma patients who make really good suggestions about clinical trial design, because we're looking at it as a patient. Like, okay, what makes your clinical trial, if it's a crowded space, what makes your trial more attractive than another trial? And if you design it a certain way, I know you're trying to get the science and the data out of it, but if you design it a certain way, patients are not going to do that. And a lot of times they'll listen. So it's fabulous, because, you know, there was one company that was developing kind of this fanny pack infusion, and the patients said that is a no-go for what else is out there. And smartly, they changed immediately based on the patient feedback, and they just started developing their bispecific antibody. So that was great. So first of all, I guess include educated patients in that community in the clinical trial design, even before you just try to do recruitment. Sometimes people are reaching out too late, like, oh, help me find patients for this trial, yeah. or whatever. But that's kind of too late. So involve them earlier. And then for rare diseases, this is why we built this suite of tools. This HealthTree suite of tools can be used for any other rare disease. We've had discussions with several other types of diseases, even outside of oncology and hematology. We might stand certain diseases up inside of our own foundation to go after those, because we can do it quickly, like we've done in AML. Or we might just want to partner and provide the tools to other organizations in that space if they're able and willing to kind of take the tools and just really run with them. But we do have it, and it does work. And it's been very successful in myeloma, and we won't stop developing. So we're not done yet. We still have things we want to add to the platform.
Excellent. Well, I would encourage everybody in the audience to go check it out, because I did check it out. Well, I didn't register as a patient, so there are some things I can't get in there. But, you know, it's amazing just everything that you're doing and hearing about all of it. So I greatly appreciate you joining us today and talking about it. And I want to, you know, hear about the CAR T trial as it progresses. And I hope you have a good experience with that.
Oh, thank you. It's been more complicated than I thought, but my doctor's been totally amazing. So we need all sorts of advocates in this space to help patients out.
What if you had limitless access to customer insights, accelerated timelines, and set fees? At True Serum Network, we're fueled by connections in virtually every area of healthcare as part of MJH Life Sciences. The result? Audience-fed creative and more powerful content in less time. True Serum Network, releasing what's real. Find out more at TrueSerumNTWK.com.